Joining us right now, guy who covers baseball for MLB for Fox. That's John Morosi. John, Joe, and Evan, how you doing?
Hi, John.
Outstanding, gentlemen. How's everything going for you?
Good.
Excellent. Do you think the Yankees are almost lucky that they didn't get Patrick Corbin? Because 6 years, $140 million. For a guy that's had one good year in the last 5 years, I know you're paying for what you think you're going to get from him. That seems a little pricey, John. What do you think?
Well, I'll say this, that obviously the sixth year was important to Patrick, as it should have been, and I think that all things being equal, he would have loved to have been a Yankee, but of course all things were not equal, and based on the reporting, I believe, from Billy Witz yesterday of what the offer was at $100 million over 5 years, that's a $40 million gap between what he is signing for and what was offered by the Yankees, so I think we can all understand that certainly there's a motivation to sign when the difference is that big with the highest offer. I think one thing I've been told consistently by agents that have been dealing with Brian Cashman and certainly executives as well is that he is very, very comfortable with both the roster that he already has and the process that he has in place to make it better. And by that I mean he has got a very good farm system. We saw it already and put that to work within the Paxton deal. And, of course, now, especially after getting under the luxury tax threshold, he's got a really nice financial component to things as well. So he has got a broad array of options. He knows he can make a play on just about anybody in trade, just about anybody in free agency. And for him, I think Corbin may have been the best option, but he was comfortable with where he was at 5 years, did not want to go beyond that for someone that's had Tommy John surgery. And I think he feels very comfortable, I think, in not getting him, given where the market went. And now he just goes on to the next best option.
I think what is probably annoying for a lot of Yankee fans is for the last 6 months, all we heard about is Patrick Corbin's a Yankee fan. He loves the Yankees. He said openly he'd love to be a Yankee. His brother's giving him a hat at his wedding. I mean, all this stuff about how much he loves the Yankees. Was there a number that the Yankees could have hit, less than 6 years, 140, where Corbin would have come here for a discount, or do you think it was always going to be, hey, where's the best contract? That's where I'm going.
Yeah, it's a great question. I can't really speak for Patrick in terms of exactly what his thought process was, but I think if the difference had been a little bit closer, then that may have been ultimately a decision for him to go to the Yankees. If it was, let's say, if the difference was 140 to 120, maybe that's a little closer where you can really think about it. Obviously, I think $40 million difference is that's a lot of money. Mm. And I think that, again, you go back to what's the ultimate price tag? What do you, where do you want to go? I think it's really interesting, guys, that you think about it. And sometimes it's hard. It can be hard for a player to go back to his hometown and sign there, and all the pressure of everybody there knowing he wanted that he was a Yankee fan growing up, and that really is his home place. I think it's interesting. I think there's a lot of considerations there of sometimes when you go back to your hometown, and if it doesn't go well, then quote unquote, where is home after that? I think that if the goal was to get back to the East Coast, have spring training in Florida, play a number of games every year in New York and certainly along the Acela corridor, and be closer to home without being home, I think I think Washington was a very good spot for him, as Philadelphia would have been as well. I think it's a really interesting thing where he's got the pressure from the family to go all the way home. I think that maybe sometimes for some players, getting close to home is great as opposed to maybe being all the way home with all the pressure that goes along with that.
All right. Will Washington re-sign Bryce Harper? And if not, where do you see him going?
So I think this is a really interesting topic. My thinking of this, and we'll see how the weeks prove me right or wrong, the report that came out at the end of the regular season about Harper turning down $300 million, I believe that was a mutually beneficial bit of information to get out in the public sphere. And here's what I mean by that. I think the Nationals looked at their roster and they said, you know what? We love Bryce Harper, but we don't need him as badly as we need a new starting pitcher. If we have to make a decision here, they needed pitching more than Harper because they have in their outfield right now Juan Soto, who very easily could have been the rookie of the year, Victor Robles, who they thought was the best young outfielder that they had in their organization before Soto broke out. And they've got Adam Eaton. They also have Michael Taylor in reserve. They've got Howie Kendrick, who can play the outfield. Every team would love to have Bryce Harper, I think, but the Nationals needed Corbin more. So I think this gives them cover by saying, hey, listen, we offered Harper $300 million. He said no. What are you going to do? And we went out there and got the pitcher. So I think that they have cover from the standpoint of their home fans in that regard. With Harper, I think it did him a world of good to have it out there at the beginning of the offseason. Hey, guess what? I will turn down $300 million. That's a pretty cool thing to be able to say as an athlete or anybody.
Not if you get less. Not if you sign for less.
That you can say no to that. Now, he may get less.
Yeah.
But I think that from a negotiating standpoint for Scott Boras, it benefits him a lot to be able to go out there in the world and say, you know what, hey, my guy will turn down $300 million. You better beat that.
Does he have a preference, or is it simply, and I don't blame him if it is, just give me the most money and the most years and I'll go there. I'll go play in San Diego if you give me that. Or does he have a preference from what you've heard?
Well, I think Bryce has a preference. And Jim Bowden actually made this point. I think it's a very good one. You look at how Bryce Harper grew up and the teams that he followed. He was a Yankee fan, and to some degree maybe that's still part of his family, being a Yankee fan. The Cowboys, the Lakers. He has loved the iconic American sports brands.
Right.
And so I don't know that I'm going to see him sign with a team that maybe doesn't quite have that same rich heritage that the teams that do. And so that's why I think the Yankees, the Dodgers, those types of organizations, maybe the Phillies as well to an extent, I think have an advantage with Bryce because he wants to write a story here. I think that this is not just sign for the most money. He wants to be an icon of American sports. And I think he's going to sign with the place that allows him the greatest potential to do that and to leave a legacy. We talk about that more, I think, in maybe football and basketball. But in baseball, for this particular player, Bryce is very attuned to that. And I think for that reason, if the Yankees are involved and make him an offer, the Dodgers as well, I think those are two of the teams that I would look toward to being really strong candidates to sign Bryce Harper.
And don't forget, he was decked out in Ohio State gear at the Ohio State-Michigan game.
That's right, another brand. Now, certainly, right. You're talking to me. I'm in Ann Arbor right now, but I respect the iconic sports brands in that particular rivalry.
All right. Are you a Michigan guy?
Well, I am married to a Michigan alum. So my wife is a proud Michigan alum. So I would say by marriage, I did not go to Michigan, but I think certainly you have to root for the hometown team, especially when it keeps your wife happy.
I understand. happy wife, happy life. I agree with that. We're talking to John Morosi. John, how about Machado? Where do you see him going?
Well, his market is unique, and I think with Manny, I'm surprised, guys, at the extent to which the comments during the playoffs have sort of lingered since then and maybe actually affected his market value in a way that is a little more enduring than what I expected. I thought it was maybe a narrative for the moment. I think it's actually hung around longer than that. That being said, I think it does not help him that the Phillies acquired Gene Segura. Yes, they could still get Machado to play third base, but it's not maybe as pressing for them. A team that I'll mention that I think probably has a better chance at Manny than they do at Harper is the White Sox. The White Sox, I'm told, are going to be aggressive on both. They have, I think, only right now about $20 million total committed to their payroll for next year. They have been very, very judicious about how much money they've spent in recent years, and that's allowed them to have, I think, a lot of flexibility at this point in time. So the White Sox, I think, are very much involved on Machado. Mm-hmm. It would not surprise me, guys, if the Yankees are truly concerned about the appearance of hustle or lack thereof from the standpoint of the offseason, if they're truly worried about that and they're not going to be fully committed to making a big offer for Manny Machado, and if the Phillies go a different direction or if they feel content with Segura, then I think the White Sox are looming as that team that we're going to see stay in that race as long as they can for Machado, and they may actually get him if the other teams end up being a little bit shy about the market, because the White Sox need legitimacy. This is the team that, when you look at it, the Phillies, yes, but they've got, I think, a bit more of a foundation to work from right now. The White Sox desperately need a face of the franchise. They do not have a Rhys Hoskins or an Aaron Nola as the Phillies do. They need stars. They need to take away some eyeballs away from the team on the other side of town, and that's why I think Machado and Harper, that we're going to be linking the White Sox to them from now until they sign.
Interesting. John Morosi of Fox MLB. back to the Yankees filling that rotation spot with Corbin going to D.C., you tweeted last night they're shifting their focus towards Nathan Eovaldi and J-Hap. J-Hap is a safe bet. Nate Eovaldi is a risky bet. To me, the three guys in Cleveland, any one of them, Carlos Carrasco, Corey Kluber, Trevor Bauer, would be great fits. But what are the Indians looking for if they trade one of these arms and do the Yankees match up with them?
Well, they could. Now, interestingly, the Indians probably would want a young outfielder as part of that that exchange, and probably some young pitching as well. And of course, it was a young outfielder going to the Yankees in the Miller deal some number of years ago. Sort of an interesting parallel there. But I think that's what they'd be looking for. Probably outfielders, some young position players to help restock this group. Of course, they're very, very well positioned with Ramirez and Lindor for the next several years to really lead their offense. But their outfield's been very, very thin. So I would say young outfielders and maybe a young pitcher as well to effectively replace either Bauer or Kluber or Carrasco in that overall pitching depth chart. It would be fascinating, guys, to see, and certainly it's a possibility, to see the Indians and Yankees work on a trade. Because, of course, the last time they did it, it was at a time when the Yankees were not contending that particular year. But now we've seen them match up in the playoffs since then, and it would just be a really dramatic trade to see two competitors for postseason berths trading at this point in time. So I think it's probably unlikely, frankly, that I would see those two teams make a trade because of that circumstance. But the Indians are being very, very discerning about where they're at right now and their payroll. They know they can probably trade one of these guys and still win the American League Central going away. And as a result, I think we're going to see a lot of creativity from the Indians. And I do believe, guys, that we will see the Indians trade one of those big three starting pitchers between now and the start of spring.
Which one do they prefer to trade of the three?
Trevor Bauer. I'm told by multiple sources it's Bauer. There's less cost certainty with Bauer. I think at different times we have seen him be very outspoken.
He's nuts.
I think on social media, which may have caused at different times some consternation there that may weigh into some of this on some level. But I think largely this is about the fact that they cannot find a way to get him signed long term, and that complication makes them maybe a bit more willing to listen on him because they're a little bit less sure of what his long-term cost would be.
Mm. What'd you think of the Met trade with Cano and Diaz?
You know, it's really an interesting insight into where Brody Van Wagenen is and what he wants to do. I think to the extent that we ask of the Mets and have been maybe unfulfilled at times in recent years for them to be a quote-unquote big market team and act like one and spend like one and move like one.
Maybe? You say
maybe? This is a big market deal. And so I think it's, you can't say it both ways, to say that, well, you want this team to be bold and make bold moves, but then not make trades like this. They bring in Cano. Am I worried about the back end of that contract? Yes, I am, especially for a National League club. But I think when you look at the financials of it, you bring in the best closer in the game, as Brody Van Wagenen said yesterday. And I think importantly, they're not done yet. They're talking about now retaining Syndergaard. Could they stun the world and make a move for Kluber? I think it may be a little challenging now after giving all the prospects that they had to give up, or at least a couple of them here in Dunn and Kelnick in the trade. It may be a little harder for them to make that type of a trade. But I think Brody's going to be imaginative. And if I'm a Met fan today, I look at the landscape of the game and I say, you know what? My team is more relevant than it was a week ago nationally. It's more aggressive. We have more stars. I think that's a good thing. And I think this helps the franchise turn the page a little bit on the David Wright era. I know they gave up a lot. I think Kelnick is going to be a star in this league. I really do. But I think for the overall, what it means, I like this trade for the New York Mets.
I don't think it's a big market trade. I disagree with you, only because this year they're actually shaving money off their payroll because of the trade. Next year they're only picking up about $8 million. After that, you're right. The final 3 years, they're paying $20 million a year, but they also have less contracts guaranteed at that point. So I just don't look at it yet as a big market move. I think if they sign Bryce Harper, it's a big market move. I think if they sign big-time players in free agency, I'd agree with you. But I look at Rio Muto as unrealistic. I hear all these rumors, you know, Andy Martino's tweeting, they're very aggressive, they're going after him, Rosenthal's tweeting it. I just find it really hard to believe that, A, they can match up with the Marlins, and B, the Marlins would move him inside the division. Am I wrong to be pessimistic about that?
Well, I was told actually this morning that there's still a lot of activity within the division, both the Phillies and the Mets showing interest in JT. Now, I don't know if they'll actually make that move. I think the Marlins, to me, they're at a time in their evolution where they are aggressive and they're willing to deal with just about anybody because they're in that spot. They know they're not going to win the division for the next couple of years. So I think actually for them, I think they will deal within the division. I still have my reservations about if the Mets can put up with the best or can put out the best offers because of what they've already had to pull from their farm system. But I think in general this is a good approach for them to take, to be involved in all the big trade conversations. They're doing that, and I think Brody is operating. I think this is one of the key points, too, and why I think Mets fans should be encouraged. I think Brody is operating with a lot of encouragement from Jeff Wilpon. I think Jeff trusts Brody. And to the extent that there's trust there, I think we all know that the influence that Jeff has in every decision and the organization. Oh, yeah. I think if he's got Jeff's blessing to do things, then we're going to see the Mets make some moves. I think that Jeff trusts Brody on a level that I'm not sure he has trusted anybody else in baseball operations for a long time. And just based on that alone, I think Brody's going to have a lot of autonomy to make some choices, obviously within given financial limitations. But I think we're going to see him be bold because he knows that the man above him and Jeff supports him. So I think that's going to be a really key organizational leadership dynamic for this team now for the next couple of years.
Hmm. How about Bumgarner? Is you see him going anywhere? Would the Giants deal him? And if they would, what for?
I do. I think that the two teams to watch there, the Phillies and the Brewers, and I think actually there's a better chance than not that Bumgarner is playing somewhere else by spring training. It's just 1 year at $12 million, and we talk, guys, about he's basically the same age as Patrick Corbin. We talk about what Corbin got, $140 million, despite the fact that he's had Tommy John surgery. So that's a premium for pitching. And if you're a team like the Phillies that was ready to spend probably into the nine figures to get Corbin and you didn't get him, all of a sudden, then the phone call comes from the 415 area code saying, "Hey, listen, I'll trade you Bumgarner for 1 year and $12 million." You're like, "My goodness, like I'm saving all this money," and it becomes a much more appealing conversation. So, I think for that reason alone, the financial component's so manageable, they're going to find somebody to take him and probably get a pretty good prospect back. And I would mention again the Phillies and the Brewers as being probably two of the best possibilities.
Why wouldn't the Yankees be all over him, especially as a guy that's proven he's maybe the greatest postseason pitcher in mankind history?
Well, I think they are, and I think that they are on the periphery. I have not heard them as being very especially active, and I haven't heard that there's active conversations and proposals going back and forth. But based on the way that Brian Cashman is operating this offseason, I think that there's a pretty good chance that he is involved on some level with these conversations. How deeply, I'm not sure. But the reality is with the Yankees, they've got the money now and they've got the prospects, and Brian is just so comfortable with how he runs his team
that
they're part of every conversation. And I think that if you are a team that is moving a player, or if you're an agent that it has a big-time player to be signed, you are not doing anything of consequence, I believe it, in this league, and so you check Brian Cashman first. And I really believe that's the case. Brian has earned that because of how well he's run his club and all the games that he's won and all the resources that he's got. I mean, he is in a really good position. And I think that in many ways, he's more subtle about it maybe than he would have been, than things would have been in a number of years ago. But I think, make no mistake, he is an extremely influential person in the industry, and I think a lot of roads in the offseason still run through 161st Street in the Bronx there and whenever big trade's making.
The only concern I have about Madison Bumgarner is the fact that when he walks to free agency next year, if I'm him, I'd look at Corbin's contract and say, "Are you kidding me? Give me double. I want 12 years, $280 million, because Patrick Corbin isn't a pimple on my fanny." That would be my approach to free agency if I'm Madison Bumgarner, which means, I mean, would you be afraid to give him that kind of contract? Because he earned it. He's going to be almost the same age as Corbin when he gets to free agency, and he's done a hell of a lot more.
Well, that's true. And I guess I would say this, that you know the platform year, and that's a very fair point, the platform year probably guides more than it should in some cases, where we look at what have you done for me lately, and of course in Corbin's case he had a phenomenal year and he's getting paid for it. Bumgarner's been hurt the last couple of years. One of them was the freak injury off the field on the ATV, And then last year it was a broken hand during a spring training game on a comebacker. So it's been kind of two freak things, but for the most part, the arm has been good. But you're right, and he's going to be expensive. But if you're the Yankees, you're comfortable paying it, right? Now think about next offseason for New York. You probably, depending on how these go, you may need to get a new shortstop. CC is going to be a free agent again. So you'll have to make some choices around there and fill in some spots. But I think if Bumgarner comes in, and I believe it, I think he would handle New York, I think, just fine. He is so self-assured, and I say that with a degree of admiration about how he handles himself. He is so comfortable in who he is, and I think October would not fluster him in the least. So I think he'd be a great fit for the Bronx, and I would not be worried about spending a prospect now to get him, because I would know if I'm the Yankees that if I really want him, I'd be able to get him. And I think that Corbin is interesting because I've always said for a long time the Yankees have almost never gotten outbid for a player that they really, really wanted.
Right.
And I guess 5 years, $100 million, did they really, really want Patrick Corbin? I think
no.
They probably, one, really wanted him, but I don't know if I would go two reallys in that sentence and say that they were just desperate to get him. If they were desperate, they would have gone to 6 years. They weren't desperate. They didn't get him. They still have a lot of options to go.
Mm. John, we appreciate it, man.
But my pleasure, guys. We'll look forward to hopefully catching up again real soon. But thanks for having me on the show today. I appreciate it.
You got it, man.
John Morosi, Fox MLB, the latest MLB rumors.